And then you did something more. You learned different forms of philosophical argument. Different forms of philosophical argument. First you learned epistemological argument. Right? You write it down again. Epistemological argument. E-P-I-S-T-E-M-O-L-O-G-I-C-A-L. Epistemological argument. You become a good philosopher when you learn the art of epistemological argument. Then you learn dialectical argument. Then you learn the historical argument. Then you learn the quintessential metaphysical argument. And then you learn the causal argument. What is the epistemological argument? Epistemological argument, all argument in philosophy starts with facts. Where there are no facts, there are no philosophical arguments. So all these arguments start with certain facts. So epistemological argument starts with a fact. Fact of the nature of thought. From the nature of thought, you derive a conclusion, that is epistemological argument. You make a statement that all thought is of this nature. That's the first statement. In any epistemological argument, the first statement will be, nature of thought is such and such. Because of that reason, the conclusion is this. That is the nature of epistemological argument. All epistemological argument starts with the nature of thought, a statement of the nature of thought. Thought being so and so, the nature of thought being so and so, therefore it follows whatever is to be followed. You derive. All argumentation is derivation. You imply, you bring out what is inside effect. You as it were fathom into the depths of the nature of thought, and then you derive a conclusion. You bring out a jewel out of the ocean of thought and put it forward. That is epistemological argument. It's like diving into the ocean of thought. Now, what was the example of epistemological argument? Now, I won't answer this question. We had an example of the epistemological argument. From the nature of thought, something was derived. You can study the first paragraph. I can only give you a hint. If you study the first paragraph, you have the argument, one example of epistemological argument. You can open the book. It is open book examination. In the very first paragraph, you have an epistemological argument. Got it? Read out. Continue.
From it survives the longest period of skepticism and return after every vanished
Continue.
Is also the highest which is thought, sense,
and you say, good. This sentence is an argument, epistemological argument. It tells you what is the highest that thought can envisage. It gives you the argument of thought, nature of thought. What is the nature of thought? And the argument is conclusive. Is, there is no is, seems, probable, not such words at all. It's a complete argument. It's complete conclusion. The earliest preoccupation of man in his awakened thought is also the highest that thought can envisage. This argument is epistemological argument. If you examine the nature of thought, then you will find it is equivalent to the earliest occupation, preoccupation of man in his awakened thought. This is epistemological argument. No escape from it. If you really go to the highest of thought, it will come to only one thing: God, life, freedom, immortality. The highest that the thought can envisage is God, life, freedom, immortality. It is again the earliest occupation of man, and it returns again and again in mankind. Is something that highest that the thought can envisage. You climb up the highest ladder of thought, and then having reached all around, if you look up, inevitably you will see only God, light, freedom, immortality. So this statement is an epistemological statement. It's an epistemological argument. Alright, now let us see what was the historical argument. It's a good answer. Huh? I like it very much. Very nice. Bravo. Now let us see what is the historical argument. It is also in the first paragraph. Found it? Yes? Tell me.
The ancient dawns of human knowledge have left us their witnesses to his constant aspiration. Today we see a humanity satiated but not satisfied by victorious analysis of the externality of nature preparing to return to his primeval longings. The earliest formula of wisdom promises to be its last. God, life, freedom.
Excellent. Bravo to you. This is the historical argument. Sri Aurobindo says that if you look at the history, you first go to the earliest records of mankind. Then you see the today. You see the earliest past, then you see today. From there now you derive for the future. So earliest, present, and you derive the future. So historical argument tells you what has been the past, what is the present, and then you derive from it the conclusion for the future. That's historical argument, very simple. Now there is a difference between epistemological argument and historical argument. I told you at that time, historical arguments are never conclusive. Whenever you make a historical argument, the future may seem to be probable, but shows a great probability or lesser probability. The historical argument, the value of the historical argument is, it gives you a sense of the highest possible probability. It never gives you complete conclusiveness. You might say that is the weakness of the historical argument, but also strength of it, because it is never dogmatic. It can never be turned into a dogma. It always keeps you open to the future. So you see the very statement of the argument, the earliest formula of wisdom, then the word is, he doesn't say, is also the formula of the future. See the language that Sri Aurobindo uses. The earliest formula of wisdom, what is the word that Sri Aurobindo uses? The earliest formula of wisdom, promises. Now the word promise is not conclusive. He doesn't say will be or shall be, but it only promises, gives you the highest probability. It's only a promise. It promises that future will be the same formula. Alright, whereas in epistemological argument, he doesn't say promises. You revise again the epistemological argument and see the difference. You had read out that sentence. Now, what is the nature of that sentence? No. You see the conclusion. The earliest preoccupation. Yes? Is, yes. The word used is, not promises. An epistemological argument always gives you a categorical statement. It affirms without doubt. There is no doubt left. It is. The earliest preoccupation is also what the highest thought can envisage. Is also. It doesn't say seems. The epistemological argument is based upon the nature of thought. Whenever there is something based upon nature of thought, conclusion is always categorical. There is no doubt about it. It is conclusive. Historical argument, the highest historical argument, if you are really a good historian, you may forecast, which is good, but you cannot say shall or will or is. It will say it seems, probably, promises, very likely. Most likely it will happen. That is the nature of historical argument. Right? So, you have learnt now very nicely what is epistemological argument, what is historical argument. Now let us see what we have learnt about dialectical argument. What is a dialectical argument? Where is the example of dialectical argument? The second paragraph contains the dialectical argument. Yes? You have it? It's very easy if you read the first sentence. The very first sentence of the second paragraph is a statement which is dialectical argument. Let us first define what is dialectical argument. We have defined epistemological argument as an argument which states the nature of thought and derives a conclusion from it. That is epistemological argument. Historical argument states past, present, and derives conclusion about the future. Now similarly, dialectical argument, it states effect, but effect of contradiction. And having stated a contradiction, it derives a conclusion. A contradiction means there is a thesis and there is an antithesis. And having seen the thesis and the antithesis, having seen the contradiction between the two, you derive a conclusion, which is synthesis. So nature of dialectical argument is presentation of thesis, antithesis, and derivation of synthesis. All right. So if you read the second paragraph, what does it say? Read the second paragraph.
These persistent ideals of the race are at once the contradiction of this normal experience and the affirmation of higher and deeper experience, which are abnormal for humanity and only to be attained in their organized in maturity. By revolutionary individual effort or an evolutionary general progression.
Good. So Sri Aurobindo states a contradiction. These persistent ideals are contradicted. There is God, light, freedom, immortality are contradicted by normal experience of mankind. It's a contradiction. Contradiction between the ideal and normal experience. Thesis and antithesis. So the entire second paragraph is an attempt to resolve this contradiction. So the entire second paragraph is a dialectical argument.